We all have a yearning for love, but relationships can be confusing and complicated. Dr. Tammy Balaszewski says it all starts from within. It starts with a journey to center. Here's your host for Journey to Center on Empower Radio, Dr. Tammy Balaszewski.
Hey, everyone. It is Dr. Tammy. Thank you for taking time out of your day to hang with us on Empower Radio and Journey to Center. We are going to be talking about one of my very favorite topics today, relationships and romance. And who doesn't want more of that? But really, what is the purpose of romance? It seems romance is easy in the beginning of a relationship, but what happens when the bloom starts to wilt and the petals begin to drop from the rose? How do we keep passion and attraction alive and healthy? I think personally, I used to be a bit of a romance addict, and I used relationships to distract myself, from my problems, and from my life. However, I found it was eating like eating too much chocolate, and in the end, it wasn't all that nourishing, healthy, or effective. But a lot has changed in the past decade, and I'm currently in a healthy, fulfilling partnership, and I now know romance can be an opportunity to go deeper within oneself and a powerful opportunity to cultivate passionate partnership as a spiritual path. So whether you are single and wanting to invite more romance into your life, or if you are in a partnership and want to take things to the next level, there is going to be some great information for you here today on this episode of Journey to Center. We are going to be spending some quality time with my good friend, Barry Selby, otherwise known as the Passion Consultant. Barry's going to help us all understand the mysteries of love and romance and how to attract and cultivate more fulfilling romantic partnerships. We're going to be discussing his new book, The Rules of Romance, 50 Ways to Love Your Lover. And Barry is going to share with us some ideas and information about how we can up-level the intimacy, connection, and consciousness of our romantic relationships. Barry, thank you so much for being here with me today.
Oh, my pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Yes, this is very exciting. You know, my show's about love. So this is fantastic to be having this conversation with you. So, Barry, from your perspective, I would love to hear the definition and purpose of romance.
Oh, yeah, I'm like picking the juicy questions up front. I love this.
Right. This is all going to be good. This is going to be juicy. Lots of opportunity to sink our teeth into this.
Yes, indeed. So, relationships are, for some people, they've been convenience, and that's why I don't subscribe to what I believe relationships and romance are about. Deepening who we are in loving. Mm. I'm a firm believer that love is the core element of what we're about. And one of the most effective ways of expressing it is an intimate relationship. So they serve a purpose for us to deepen our connection to our own heart and our own loving and to the depth of who we really are. Mm. You talked about relationship and spiritual practice. My first principle in my book, Rules of Romance, is that relationship is a spiritual practice. And I believe that in relationship and in romance, we can, in fact, deepen who we are consciously when we're in partnership. Mm. Not that you can't alone, but even more powerfully when you're with somebody else. Because one of the joys about being in a relationship is stuff shows up.
The blessings of the problems, yes.
Exactly. It's that lovely stuff, that magic dust that creates issues and possibilities and opportunities to go deeper. And that's where the truth of healthy relationship is to go deeper every moment, every opportunity, versus just being happy together.
Mm. You know? That's true. And I wonder, you know, if a lot of people look at that as the case and the opportunity in relationships. It's like, it's great when stuff comes up. Oh, this is wonderful. We get to fight. So yeah, let's get into that. I would love to talk about that. You know, a lot of people think, well, why do we fight? This is bad. We have to break up. But you're saying that's not necessarily the case.
Well, let me just say up front, I've done it both ways and it really sucked, to be blunt, when I did it the old way. Just give an example from my own sordid past. I grew up in a family. My parents are still together after 58 years, and I respect them deeply for that. It's incredible, you know, because to be honest, marriage hasn't been as strong as it used to be in some ways. However, in my younger years, my parents, I love them dearly, and one of the things I love about them is we never really had any arguments in the family. Now, I would say, from my perspective, part of it was growing up in a conservative English background where raised voices and emotional expression wasn't really part of the vocabulary. But at the same time, my family was very peaceful in some ways. Mm-hmm. What happened, though, I discovered when in my dating life in my teens and 20s, I'm getting into a relationship with a woman and we get together and it'll be wonderful initially. As soon as there was an argument, I'd leave. Because the wiring I had was that arguments and relationship didn't go together based upon what I thought was I grew up with.
Sure.
And I saw other people around me, neighbors and parents of peers, getting divorced. And so I had it wired in my head, again, my own perception, not necessarily the truth, that arguments meant the end of relationship.
Mm-hmm.
And so I did that in the old days, and I missed out on all the ideas of joyful makeup sex, all those good things. But the truth was that I also realized through my journey that I'd sacrificed the possibility of deeper relationship because I thought that the argument would be the end of the road, and so not that true.
Right. That makes sense.
Yeah.
So what are your thoughts about that now?
Well, what's about that now is that really, and it's something I've learned from some of my teachers, is that relationship really ends when there's just no loving left. There's no need to be together. There's no desire or anything. So when issues show up, it's usually because we're invested and we're emotionally connected. So it's the best time to do some work. And one of the biggest gifts our partners bring to us, which we'll talk about later as one of the five keys, is that our past will continue to reflect in our present unless we resolve it. And our present relationship will bring that up for us as a gift for us to resolve once and for all.
Mm-hmm. Yes, absolutely. I totally agree with you. That makes sense. Because most of us walk around with a backpack of, I call it, you know, issues or, you know, rocks of, you know, the baggage we bring into relationships. And sometimes when we're fighting, it's not about anything that's going on in that moment, but pain that we've carried into the relationship. So,
yes,
you know,
exactly.
that comes up as an opportunity to kind of maybe look underneath the rock and get rid of it.
Well, some of us carry steamer trunks with us, so it's sometimes different size baggage containers.
But isn't that true? And it's so often, you know, I bet you see this as an expert and a, you know, a consultant. When people start fighting, they argue for their perspective and defend and you know, my intention is to support people in just stop defending yourself and start asking questions.
Right.
What's coming up for you? What's coming up for you now? What's underneath that? And usually it goes back to something that happened much earlier in their lives.
Yes, indeed. And it is something where the question is almost like, well, what does it remind you of? Where has it happened before? Does it sound familiar? And it's like, oh my God, I remember, did this 10 years ago or 20 years ago? Mm. And then the chance to heal comes up. And that's the good news. And the grace is that when you do see that clearly and go, hang on a second, it's nothing about this person. It's something in my history. Then you can take the steps to heal that once and for all. And then your relationship transforms to a whole new level. And the gifts that show up are even more abundant.
So true. Yeah, so true. So instead of arguing for your stance and your perspective and defending yourself, if you could just stop in that moment and start asking more questions of yourself and of the other person, that is where the real opportunity to go deeper is, don't you think?
Absolutely.
So yes, I love something you wrote in one of your chapters. If you blame your partner or blame yourself, you lose. How do we get out of the blame game?
Well, the thing is, we blame because we just make assumptions. We think something is wrong, therefore it must be wrong. Instead of saying, why am I thinking that? What's the perspective? And it is a choice point every single time because judgment is usually because we're in a position of trying to be right versus being loving or happy. And when we start doing that without thinking of the consequences, we get into a trap.
Yes, that's true. So you have a chapter in your book called He Said, She Said. How do we communicate more effectively?
Well, part of it is when one thing we forget to do is to verify what we heard is what was said.
Ah,
we just get
perception checking.
Oh, yes. Because the thing is, I talk about this as well, that men and women do speak different languages. And in some ways we do. And this is, you know, John Gray talks about this and so are other teachers, that there's the whole principle that we are not of the same mindset because we are different. We are the yin and yang. And so men generally are about problem solving, moving to completion. Women are about opening up and expressing life. So our direction of conversation is a little different. So it is good to check with each other when we're talking in a male-female connection of what is the clarity of the message being said. You know, for example, in a relationship couple with a man and woman together, when a woman is upset and speaking and talking, a man's usual automatic response is trying to fix it. And it's the last thing the woman wants. What she wants is to be heard. And if he simply listens, he doesn't have to fix anything. It's not his fault. All he does is listen. at the end of the time that she's speaking, which could be 2 minutes, 3 minutes, an hour, whatever it is, she will be more grateful simply because he held the space. And that's the transformation experience that many men don't understand because they weren't raised that way.
Mm-hmm. That's so true. And it's so interesting because when I work with men, they often say that they're arguing with these women about their feelings. And I'm like, that's not really going to be effective for you long term in the relationship. You can't tell somebody that they're wrong to feel what they feel. But, right. You know, I think that is a real opportunity. Again, it's about giving people the tools to communicate more effectively. And yeah. I know there's been a lot of information, a lot of books out there about, you know, women should never ask a man how they feel. And I would love to hear your perspective on this. My husband and I have talked about this a lot. So I would like to know what your thoughts are about that. Should a woman ask a man ever how they feel?
Well, it's a tricky question because men don't know they feel. To be blunt, you know, we are not wired to think that. We're thinkers and doers. That's what men are meant to be. That's what being raised as. And the conversation about feelings is something that takes practice, really. Men are not usually facile or skilled in expressing emotions. And so when a woman asks how he feels, it's not going to give her the satisfaction the answer she wants because a woman is immersed in feelings. It's a natural state for them to be in the feminine.
Right, right.
So when she asks a man how he feels, he may say, I feel fine. And she's going to sit there going, that's not what I meant. I don't understand that. You know, because she knows a full spectrum of colors of emotion that she's in every single moment, which is the joy of the feminine. Mm-hmm. Men don't feel that way. So it is a question, it isn't a question about how they feel, but it's like, it's almost better to go with what you're thinking to start with than what's feeling below that.
Right.
So it's going to be on the level where the man goes, well, I'm thinking I should do this, but why are you feeling, why are you thinking that? Oh, because it feels better. Oh, okay, there's a feeling level tied to that, but it's simpler. It's much, much easier in some ways to understand. Because there's less range of emotions that men generally express.
Yes. Yeah, this is something we've discussed a lot in my relationship with my husband. He taught, you know, I asked him about this. And I said, is this wrong? Do you not want this? And he goes, well, no, I think probably as children, you know, we were more in touch with our feelings. But society kind of makes that less acceptable because the men are supposed to be strong and they're supposed to be the providers and they're not supposed to be crying or be vulnerable. So it's almost like society perpetuates that notion, which makes it which they disconnect even further from their feelings, which ultimately isn't good for them or the relationship. So it's an interesting subject to consider, but I like what you're saying. It's like you can start with what are you thinking, and then giving them the opportunity to kind of eventually go deeper if they're open to that.
Yeah, to be patient, because to be honest, you know, we don't have emotions at the tip of our in the front of their mind, whereas women can be more available to men, simply ask what they think. That's more present for men, and then that can lead to emotional conversation, but it's not something usually in the forefront.
Yes, I understand that completely. And, you know, something I did when I first started going out with my husband was I asked him frequently what honored him. And he didn't know what to do with that. He's like, I don't know. Nobody's ever asked me that. I have no idea what to do with that. And I said, well, you know, go take some time, think about it, and get back to me when you know something. And he really got there pretty quickly. I was actually kind of surprised. He called me like a half hour later and said, you know, I figured out what would honor me. I thought I'd hear from him in 2 days. And now he's really, really, really good at that. You know, this is what honors me. This is what honors me. This is what I'm feeling. And he's become very adept in those realms. But he said it was
wonderful
because I asked the questions and allowed him to get there in his way, in his time. So I guess it's probably different for everyone, but I always find this to be a fascinating subject and a conversation to have, especially with men.
Yes. Oh, it is. It opens up a whole other topic of discussion because it is something that is not an unusual vocabulary.
Yes, it really is. And it is rich with opportunities, isn't it?
Oh, yeah.
So I know you also talk about, and I love this subject as well, another nice one. You talk about projections, and
yeah.
I know it's one of the trickier aspects of relationships. Can you tell me what projections are and what the opportunity in them are?
Well, it's better if I start with an example to make it easier.
Sure, perfect.
If you picture a couple been together for a while, and they both decided to get healthy, and they're going to go to the gym and work out, and I'm say this in a way that's not judging. Say, for example, she says, and this is just one example, she starts getting upset with her husband or boyfriend because he's not working out, he's looking like a slob, and he's sitting around watching TV, and she's judging it, and she's getting upset with him and pissed off, to be blunt. And she gets upset with him. But what's really going on, and this is where the projection comes from, is that she's upset because she's not doing what she said for herself. She's broken her own agreements. Mm-hmm. And so what projection usually is a sense where we don't honor our true agreements. And because somebody out there is not keeping their agreements, we judge them because what they're doing is showing us where we don't want to look. Mm-hmm. And that's the biggest piece, is that we're avoiding facing our own demons, our own stuff, because the person out there is a scapegoat for our upset.
You know, almost like what I hear you saying, and I haven't heard like quite like this before, it's almost like a guilty conscience. It's like we're going to be in judgment of another if we have a guilty conscience about something within ourselves.
Right. It's the way we feel. It's a pretend way we feel better, but it's not really working. But the truth is, we're actually just depleting our energy anyway by resenting. It doesn't work either way. But the truth is that when we face our own stuff, we stop judging other people because it's not theirs in the first place.
Hmm. Yeah, that's interesting. I love that. So to be able to take that opportunity when we're in judgment of another to look at ourselves going, well, how am I doing this?
Or how am I thinking I might do this? Or how am I, because that's the thing, it's an enabling behavior. And it is something that is, again, the opportunity with relationship is to see ourselves more clearly in the mirror. And that's what it comes down to, is do we recognize that it is a mirror, that it's not, in fact, somebody else and stuff. Now, before I go any further, there are certain behaviors that are totally not ours, they are somebody else's, but it's when it's the internal piece. That's the opportunity to reflect back on ourselves.
Absolutely. And I do think that's what was the real shift for me when I really got that relationships are a mirror.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when I stopped looking to someone else to make me feel better about myself or to fill something inside of me, and when I was no longer in the position of needing anything outside of myself and able to look at relationships as a mirror, because I do think outer reality is a reflection of inner reality, and relationships are probably the richest opportunity to really get to know ourselves on a deeper level, you know, and if that's your intention, that relationships can be amazing in that way. It's interesting because it's not everybody's intention. It wasn't mine until I got to the point where relationships simply were not working no matter what I did. So I was kind of in my later 30s when I was like, we're going to really do things differently now. You know, I really want to learn to do things differently and better. And sometimes I think that is the gift of pain and crisis when we're in relationships and they're really not working anymore. That can be the universal great awakener, don't you think?
Yes, it is. It's a big wake-up call, and that's the opportunity.
Yes.
But again, not everybody catches the sign. They simply would ignore it one more time and go back into the darkness and pretend it's all fine. And that's unfortunate, because their relationship will never get beyond a certain point. And the possibility of freedom and of depth of connection that is available when you do a sort of level of work, it's beautiful. I love this stuff.
Oh, I do too. I feel like it's about just raising in our own consciousness and getting above the cloud line. And it's a beautiful, glorious day. And a lot of people are complaining about, you know, the doom and the gloom and the clouds and the rain and the weather. And I'm like, I don't know what you're talking about. it's glorious. The sun's out. There's rainbows and unicorns. I don't know what you're talking about.
Absolutely.
Let me help you get up here. So I love that that's also your passion and your purpose. I think that's just, I love the work that you're doing. This is good stuff.
Thank you.
So maybe this is a little redundant, but I want to talk about this too. In one of your chapters, you talk about loving someone more than you love yourself. And, you know, that might seem like something that's noble, but I know in the end, you know, and I like how you say this, you're actually using them.
Yeah.
Oh. Can you tell me more about that? I mean, it's kind of an interesting notion. I kind of get it, but I want to hear more from your perspective. If you love someone more than yourself, you are, in fact, using them.
Because you're using them to avoid anything you're not loving about yourself, in simple terms. The truth is that we can't, I mean, because it's really a fake, because you can't love more than you have. It's not possible.
Right.
But the thing is, if we start to judge who we are, we pretend that we're not loving ourselves as much as that. And that's the indicator, again, like the mirror. Mm-hmm. Is that by loving somebody else more than we love ourselves, we're denying ourselves full, holistic respect for ourselves, to appreciate who we are. And we're using our own judgments against ourselves to hide parts of loving that we can actually embrace ourselves. So the work is really a reminder, when you love somebody else that much, then you're saying, okay, so what inside of me am I not loving enough? Maybe it's a body image issue. Maybe it's a mental belief structure. Maybe it's not doing the work you think you should be doing. There's a part of our lives that we may be judging as not good enough yet, so we withhold loving from ourselves. And so by loving somebody else, we're lying to ourselves, because it means we're not honoring who we are.
Yeah, using again a person as an opportunity for distraction from ourselves, which is what my pattern was for a long time. So glad I'm over that. So I would love to know more from you the difference between codependence, interdependence, and independence. Can we talk about the dependence factor?
The dependence factor, yes. Well, if I can take our listeners back in time, as it were, the model I always use for reference was the show All in the Family, which was on TV many, many moons, decades ago. And All in the Family was Archie and Edith Bunker with his husband and wife, who were the paradigm that really fairly typical of the culture, although more comedic, back in the 40s and 50s. And most of the parents' generation or grandparents in some cases, that were the way that men and women interacted. The man was the breadwinner who would come home with the bacon, and the wife at home, the housewife, cooking and meat. And there was this diametric difference between the two. And Archie Bunker was not what I call a masculine man. He was a macho guy. He was like, I'm getting it done in my way, the highway, and it's the way it is. And Edith was a very big housewife. At the same time, they couldn't live without each other. They were halves of the same whole. And that's what codependence really is. It's this place where there's gaps in who they are. And they relied on each other to fill those gaps, which was romantic in the old days, but it's not truly where we want to go. Mm-hmm. That was the codependent stage. And what happened was there was a reaction to that. Because after that time, there was the feminist movement, the women's lib movement that happened in the 60s primarily, and then into the 70s. And women women were encouraged infused, not the right word, but they were pushed towards being independent. Right. And what women did was they went from the out of the old mindset of being a housewife into the workforce in a more autonomous way. And through the generational shift, there was this focus where women, what they did was they became, in some ways, men, because they burned their bras, cut their hair, took off makeup, wore suits, and went to work.
Right.
And so for a period of time there was this shift of culture. And when men and women were on the same terms, but it wasn't equality of the differences, it was equality of the sameness. And what happened was, as that evolved, women and men became independent of each other because there was no longer this polarity of extremes. It was all the same. So in the 70s and 80s, there was this dance of independence, where we had separate bank accounts and we negotiate a relationship. And it's like, if you're okay, we're okay, and we'll work it out. And that's been a way it's been for a while, where men and women were really, they had equal roles, but it wasn't authentic nature roles. It was just what was trained by society.
Yeah, they weren't complementary.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. And that's where the interdependence comes in. Mm-hmm. What I've been studying the last 5 years myself, and what I am passionate about, because it's what woke me up, is what I call interdependence. And that is really where the man and woman, I'm using those as the models. I'll try that again. See how my throat for a second.
Darn women, frogs.
Yes, they get in there. The men and women are authentic to who they are. Because men, what we have lost touch with, we were for a long period of time, and in my book, I talk about the macho versus masculine. The difference between who we were and where we are is that we were driven by our cojones versus driven by our heart and our spine. And authentic masculine, the warrior, the real honorable man, has a strong, clear spine, a direction, a nobility about who he is and what he's about, that is very dashing and also very attractive for women because he has a direction and purpose in the world. And a woman, which is in her feminine nature, fully expressing as she is, which is the ultimate goddess energy in a way, she is so radiant and so alive. And what really, frankly, we need more on the planet in big doses. Mm-hmm. There is this extreme difference in a way, the yin and yang relationship, masculine and feminine. And what happens is when they get together, it's an interdependence because we're not dependent upon each other. But what happens is we bring 100% of who we are in the relationship. Instead of being a 50-50 relationship, it's 100-100 relationship. And that's a much bigger, healthier way of being. That's what interdependence for me is. It's bringing all our gifts together to share and grow.
Yes, I love that. You know, the vision that comes to mind is like two circles overlapping, like the math symbol. Instead of trying to be like one big circle where you're blending two halves make a whole, that's not the case with interdependence. It's two circles overlapping, where there's still clear boundaries in the context of the relationship, and each person has their own center and doesn't look to the other to fulfill them on every level. And I've found that is what makes relationships work. You know, there's areas where we overlap and there's areas we don't. You know, like my husband likes to watch football. I like to paint mandalas. And we don't try to get the other person to like what we like. There's plenty of things that we do share and love and overlap. And then there's areas that don't. And that's that's great. I think that's healthy. I think that's perfect. So I'm excited about really getting into that, how we keep romance alive in long-term relationships. I think that's a really great subject, and I'll be taking notes there. And then we're also, when we come back, going to be talking about the 5 ways to stop romance roulette and create the love life you really want. You really deserve it. So we're going to gratefully go to a quick sponsorship, and when we get back, Barry's going to share with us romance roulette and how to avoid it. So hang on, we'll be right back.
My name is Dale Pazinski. I'm 19 years old, and this is how I live United. I've always been kind of a computer geek, and I found a way to use those skills to help the homeless in my community. For people facing hard times, computer skills and a basic resume are so important. It may seem like a small thing, but it makes a huge difference in people's lives. So with United Way, I created a program where I work with the homeless. Together, we go through their whole job history, write a resume, and then save it on their very own USB drive. We provide workbooks and training certificates. I even budgeted for cupcakes so we can celebrate as a class when one of our people gets a job. That's huge. When somebody says, "Hey man, that job that you helped me apply for, I got it." That's what living United feels like to me. My name is Dale Pazinski. I help people achieve financial independence. So I don't just wear the shirt, I live it.
Give, advocate, volunteer, live United. Go to liveunited.org.
Ranger Station, Ranger speaking.
Yeah, hi. I'd like to report a bear sighting.
Location?
In the forest, near the side of the road.
No need for alarm, sir. The forest is where bears live.
But this was no ordinary bear.
No ordinary bear?
Yeah, 1 second, I'm having a smoke taken in the view. Next thing I know, I am face to face with Smokey Bear.
Let me guess, Smokey had a tip for you.
He did. He must have seen me toss my cigarette on the ground. He told me never to do that because it only takes one spark to start a wildfire.
He's a smart bear. Did you know that 9 out of 10 wildfires are caused by humans? That means 9 out of 10 wildfires can be prevented.
That's what Smokey said. I had no idea.
That's why Smokey's famous, and you're not.
Good point.
Get your Smokey on. If you see someone in danger of starting a wildfire, step in and make a difference, because 9 out of 10 wildfires are caused by humans. Brought to you by Smokey Bear, the U.S. Forest Service, your state forester, and the Ad Council. Learn more at SmokeyBear.com.
Only you can prevent wildfires.
Before there were computer games and HDTV, cram courses and teaching to the test, there was this thing called imagination, a tool so powerful it could transport kids on the most amazing journeys of their lives, from outer space to center field at Yankee Stadium. It is for these journeys that Destination Imagination was created, an extraordinary after-school program in creativity and teamwork for every child. At Destination Imagination, teams are formed and challenges are met with a whole lot of imagination. And while we can't guarantee it'll get your kid into Harvard or onto American Idol, we're pretty sure that Destination Imagination will be the most important journey they make this year. Maybe any year. Parents, teachers, start a Destination Imagination team by calling 888-321-1503 or visit destinationimagination.org. That's destinationimagination.org.
You're listening to Empower Radio. Now, back to Journey to Center with Dr. Tammy Balashevsky.
Hello, my friends. Thank you for being with us here today on Journey to Center and Empower Radio. We're talking about the powerful quality of romance, which I love this subject. This is one of my favorites. So if you have a question for our expert, Barry Selby, get out your pencils and write down this phone number, 248-809-3474, 248-809-3474. We'd love to hear from you. So, Barry, I want to talk about this romance roulette and how to avoid it. How do we avoid romance roulette? That doesn't sound like it's a good thing. The odds won't be good.
That was kind of the way the title got coined. Romance roulette really is that simple. Is that, you know, it's a hit and miss experience if we don't take conscious steps. So there's a few things involved in this.
Yes.
I think I mentioned five, but I see my five in my list. One of the biggest things is we don't have a clear picture of what we're looking for. You know, we're open to relationship and we're open to embrace because we're in such a lovely, unconditional place. But then we attract someone that doesn't fit what we want. And then we complain about it. And that's not functional. It's that sense of not having a clarity of direction. It's like, you don't take aim, you don't know where you're going. And the sense of that is to have things you do, such as vision boards or affirmations or pictures, or even more effectively, go to places you love to be to find people with a similar mindset. Because that's one of the things I teach with the clients, is that if they want to attract somebody they want to be with, find somebody that has common interests, usually in service, not so much in work, but there's somewhere you go, things if you work with the SPCA, or if you work with the Red Cross, or if you work in old people's homes, whatever your joy of service is, you'll find somebody who has the same mindset. That's where you find like-mindedness. So again, those are clarities of where you want to go. And that's a powerful piece. On the flip side of that, one of the other core elements I work with the clients, because it's so prevalent, is what I have to work through, is the back to the thing we talked about earlier about baggage, is that we tend to use unconsciously our baggage, our history of the past relationships, to paint our future. So what we will do, often unconsciously, is if we had a past history, for example, of someone who didn't love us enough, so we felt abandoned by them, and they've come back from all the way back to when we were a child with our parents. But what we will do is we will perpetuate that same pattern again and again, even though we may not notice that the pattern the person brings to us, because it's not something we see like on their face, but it's in their nature, will attract someone who fits that paradigm until we resolve it. So someone who's been through serial relationships again and again, repeating the same patterns over and over, one of the keys is once they become aware of what that patterns are that they're repeating, they can heal and resolve them once and for all. So then the next time they meet somebody, if the pattern is there, they won't even be attracted to them.
Yes, that makes perfect sense.
So those are core strokes. The other part is also that we tend to do, well, not everybody, but some people do, is when we're looking to be with somebody, we put on a presentation of who we're not.
The false mask. Oh, yes. I'm very familiar with
this. You know, and it's like the truth is, if we put on a pretense, now I'm not saying outright lying, but we put on a certain persona that we're not really, it's going to be hard work to keep that up all the time, especially as you get closer to somebody. So at some point in time, the walls come down, and in the romance, and suddenly the person looks at you and goes, that's not the person I met. Now, I perpetuated that myself in my past, so I have some regrets in past relationships I've resolved because I did put on a certain presentation that once we got into a relationship, I'd no longer carry it through. I couldn't keep maintaining it.
Right, sounds exhausting.
Very much so. And it's also hard to practice. It's like if you are creating a web of false lies, if you want to be that extreme, trying to remember what you said and what you didn't say, it's hard work. And you one time and you, definitely not good. So I'm very impassioned with helping people, men and women, women particularly because they were my preference of working with, to be authentic to their nature, to be natural in who they are, because that's what will attract their perfect partner. And it's automatically maintainable. There's no practice or requirement to step up to another level. They're not to pretend to be something they aren't. So to be authentic to who we are, because then the person will see who we really are from the get-go, rather than having to look through these filters to see who we really are.
Yes.
So that's a powerful piece.
Yeah. That's great advice. Find your authentic shape. Be your true self. Good advice.
It's like, we need more on the planet. I mean, we've been trained by society to put on a certain presentation to fit a certain mold that we're not. And it's unfortunate because we then betray, in some ways, who we really are, which is not good.
Yeah,
so
it doesn't work. You're trying to build something on a foundation that's cracked from the beginning.
Yeah.
Yes.
Like building houses on sand.
I have a couple of people listening from Norway, if you can believe it, Donald and Joran, and they've been married for almost 25 years. And we're just curious here, how do you keep romance alive long-term?
There's a few things I can recommend.
I want to hear it. I'm coming up on 10 years with my husband, so I want to know. Give me the secrets.
Well, there's two parts of this. One is the actual activities of romance, which I recommend people keep trying new things, doing things that are more romantic. Excuse me. And I talk about this. I'm actually one chapter in the book, and I actually have a website handout. Let's say this. In my book, I talk about finding ways to be romantic, to do romantic things. And it's not about the big gestures of, you know, dinner and flowers, because they get old pretty quickly. But it's the way you are together, how you interact with each other, things you can do together. And actually I went online and found a bunch of romantic tips and compiled a 55-60-page booklet, basically, which is downloadable from my website, which talks all these romantic tips, ideas, and things to do, because it is about fresh ideas. Romance is something that it's a constant. It's also fresh every moment. So it's how do you look at each other differently every time? How do you see each other through fresh eyes? And sometimes it's doing things externally, activity-wise. At the same time, it's also about being authentic to your nature. In my book, there's a couple of chapters talking about the authentic masculine, authentic feminine. And I mentioned that something I studied and learned from one of my teachers was the ability when a couple comes together in romance to connect sexually. Because the one thing also is that sex can get old as well if it's not fresh and new and honored in a spiritual practice. And so I talk about in working with couples that when the man and woman together, that they choose, because we're in life together, and a lot of times couples spend a lot of time together doing the bills, taking care of the kids, doing the shopping. It's no longer sexual romance partnership. It's a buddy system. So it's remembering how to disengage from that, connect back to the masculine and feminine poles of the relationship, that those magnetic attractions that create that romance and that pull and that attraction. And one of the things I studied, which I love, because it was my own teacher taught me this, is when you choose to engage on a more intimate sexual level, is to make a spiritual practice. And this is something I reckon call it like an honoring system, where, for example, the man and woman facing each other, and the man chooses to gather up all, this is all, say this, it's all as a practice. It's not something you can literally do, but you do it to symbolize it, symbolic, that's what it is. So the man will gather up all his feminine energy that he's been carrying along through the day, through the week, through the month, gathers up into a small package that he reaches, that he gathers up in front of him, and then reaches across to his partner and puts it in her hand as a honorable gift that she will take care of for the duration of time they're spending together intimately. Then she would do the opposite, where she would gather all her masculine energy. And it's usually more the women than the men that have this, because men, women tend to step into masculine more easily. She gathers up all her masculine energy, and she, again, as a gift, offer it to the man for safekeeping. What that symbolically does is it gives back each partner their full polarity opposite to create this attraction. Because the idea, I talked about this before, about how masculine and feminine attraction are like magnets. Magnets have a north and south pole that are attracted to each other. You put two north poles together, they don't attract. Two south poles together, they don't attract. But what people forget is you put two magnets in a drawer together, and over time, magnetic attraction will fade away because the magnets cancel each other out.
Right.
Couples do the same thing, masculine and feminine, male and female, men and women. It's true in gay relationships too, but it's more obvious in masculine and feminine relationships, male female relationships. And so that remembrance to recharge the batteries, which batteries can be kind of recharged, reconnect the romance, because romance really is a reminder of the titillation and the joy and that connection, that intimacy between two couples. Not necessarily about sex, although that's part of it, but it's that intimacy of heart opening to each other in a way that is sexually attractive. And so I'm a big proponent of recharging the batteries, as it were, recharging the polarity to create that wonderful, like, it's not chemistry anymore, but it's not chemistry, it's that attraction that really makes romance juicy.
Yes, I think that's so important to be able to maintain that level of appreciation and attraction for your partner. I think that's something that I try to lead with every single day. I don't think a day has gone by since I've met my husband that I don't tell him I appreciate him. I think it might drive him crazy, but I think he kind of likes it too. So you also talk about the importance of the quality of freedom in relationships and romance. Why do you think that's the case?
Well, I just think of some of my own history a lot of times too. I had a relationship a long time ago, it's a long time ago now, where when I was in a relationship, it was almost like I was enclosed and encapsulated in it. And I didn't feel like I could live in the world and do this, be in the relationship. And what I teach and what I'm really clear about is how relationships free us up, because what happens is, as we saw through the whole call, it's a conversation that relationships are a chance to do work on ourselves, to free up ourselves, to open up our energy, to be more free. So the gift of a relationship is we have more freedom in who we are and expression of who we are by being with a partner. It's one of the benefits. Not to say it's not wrong being single, but in a relationship, one of the benefits of being together is we get to relax our boundaries more and be more free in who we are. Mm-hmm. And it's this authentic expression that is sadly lacking in society in large part. So having a relationship that supports ourselves and being more free to be ourselves authentically, that transforms everything. And then everything in life shifts into a place of flow and grace.
That's so true. You know, I've done that, I think, with Steve. When I first met him, my intention was just to create a safe space for him to find his authentic shape. And I know he's done that for me. And then as we're comfortable with that and we move out into the world with it, it seems we attract everything that we want and need for our careers and for our lives. So I think that can be a really powerful gift. Instead of wanting to change somebody, instead of telling them who they need to be to love them, ask them who they are and let them find their shape. And like, don't pretend. Don't put on the false mask. Be yourself. Don't, you know, if they don't like it, then you don't want to waste, you know, 10, 20 years there, or at least I would.
Exactly. No, I definitely agree with that.
So, Barry, what do you think one of the greatest gifts you can ever give to your partner is?
Well, there's so many.
I know there is. I want to know the best one. What's the number one gift from your perspective in this moment?
One of the things, because it's where I'm working right now, is I know one of the biggest gifts I can receive from my partner is to be supportive where I'm going and to be like a cheerleader for the partner, because we have a lot to do on the planet. Those of us who are more awake and conscious are choosing this, knowing there's a lot of work to do. And having a partner who is a cheerleader for us, who jumps in the trenches with us to help us do it, mm-hmm. who really is got our backs, is such a gift. Because that's the other part of being a relationship, is the support structure we can create with each other. Not codependence, but ability where you say, look, I got your back. Go for this. I love what you're doing, and I know you'll be successful, and whatever I can do to help you, I will. And knowing it's their dream, but you're still in it with them because you love them so much. That's a huge gift.
Yeah, it really is, to have that support and have that consistent cheerleader instead of poking holes in them, just lift them up. I think that's so true. That's so true. Finding the best in your partner, focusing on the best rather than the worst. I talk about that a lot. What's right with this picture? And something I like doing with Steve, and I think I read about this in your book somewhere. It's like, you know, what you appreciate about him. I have this game, what I like about you. It drives him crazy. Mm-hmm. Okay, honey, let's play what I like about you. These are the three things I like best about you. And then you have to go. And he's like, oh, not this again.
Tell him it's good practice.
Yeah, but it's fun to, you know, just really focus on what you appreciate about that person, or really think about why you were attracted to them in the beginning. And I've had couples come in where they say, well, you know, they know. No, maybe they don't, or they do. It's in the back of their mind. You know, let's bring it up to, you know, for conscious conversation in the here and now. And it always transforms the energy in the room when we play this game.
Yes.
I think that's just so important. Important, so vital. It's like to continue to nurture the garden. It's so important. So some really good information. So let's talk about, you have something called the Romance Blueprint. I'd like to know more about what that is, the 90-day relationship makeover program for single women. Tell me about that. That sounds pretty cool.
Well, I've actually hinted at it over the course of the call, because I mentioned the three main areas I talked about, which I talked about the Russian romance roulette, is for women especially, because I've been in a relationship with women. I've seen women have missed, because I know I didn't do things right with them, so now I know what helps. And I've seen so clearly what I love to help with women is to have them connect to their feminine. So what I mentioned earlier in the conversation, that one of the pieces I talked about is being authentic to who we really are, and women particularly, because I see how easy for them to jump into it, because men are a bit slower learning, to be honest. But women can get this faster. I have the Romance Blueprint that was designed, or it came birthed out of my coaching and my understanding. And there are five tracks in there, three tracks, the ones I already mentioned, which one of them is this feminine practice, which is why it's for women. Every week for 12 weeks, there are different practices that reconnect my clients, the women who do the program, back to the feminine. And some of them are very silly, some of them are very fun, some of them are very deep, some of them are very spiritual. The different flavors through the whole 12 weeks. That's one of the tracks, which is basically embracing the present moment in the feminine nature. One of the tracks which I talk about, which is the thing with the steamer trunks and the backpacks of rocks, it's the healing of the baggage, because it's time to stop dragging the bags into the present moment. It's time to choose relationship from a clear space. So by doing so, that requires releasing the past baggage. And so through the 12 weeks again, there's a releasing process to every week, which goes back even to childhood, to any things that are impacting on our psyche that we believe we've taken on, that are impacting our choices that we don't longer need to carry, so we can resolve, release, and move on from there. And then the other part is the vision of the future, which we're talking about with the vision boards and the idea of doing a collage montage type thing where we create a vision of what we want. However, I love vision boards, but I believe it's the first step, not the last step. And what I talk about is that a vision board is a two-dimensional product. It's a flat piece of poster board. So then the question is, if that was now real, how would it feel? So for the 12 weeks, I help create the vision, which is a healing level experience. So by the time you get in the 12 weeks, a vision board is no longer two-dimensional. It's four-dimensional, because it's deeper, and it's also got a timeline on it. So you can feel it pulling you forward into the relationship you want to create. And there's two more tracks as well. So this 90-day program is intentionally 90 days because I really firmly believe it's not an instant fix. You know, work for clients one-on-one, they commit to a month on me at least because it's not one fix done. And the same with this program, it's step-by-step over 90 days that is transformational. And by the end of the 90 days, miracles happen. And
yes,
I have asked my clients if they can to commit to not being in a relationship or being single when they do the program, because the temptation after doing the program is to jump into a relationship now. And sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. But I do request if they can do the 90-day program free and clear and then choose a relationship, miracles happen.
Yes, it takes a while to rewire, doesn't it?
Yes, it does.
Yeah, get that foundation really solid. I think that that's so true. So I love your website. Can you give that out to our listeners?
My main site, which has a free video course on the front end, is thepassionconsultant.com. That's thepassionconsultant.com. That's my website. On that website are all the other pieces. And you can get there directly by these other links, or you can just find them on the site. But the book is on there, and my romance blueprint is on there. And I also have opportunities for coaching, and I've got some tips. And I do, in fact, have a blog there as well, because everybody has a blog. And the blog is really not just about relationships. It's about my own journey, because I've been through quite a journey myself. So you can find a little expose on who I am and what I believe on the blog section. But you can go to romanceblueprint.com to find the section of the site that talks about the romance blueprint, of course. I also have the book there, which is rulesofromance.com. It's also on the site. And I love adding to it. I keep adding to the site and refining it, polishing, because it's, like me, it's a work in progress. In fact, my last blog post, the one before that, was I am a work in progress. And that's true for all of us, not just my clients, definitely, and for the coaches. If we're not a work in progress, we don't believe we are, we've stopped learning and growing. That's not a good thing. So I'm
that's when we start to get old. I like that definition. When we start, stop learning, stop growing, that's when we get old. And my intention is to not ever get old. Keep learning, keep growing, keep expanding. You know, I say we're like never-ending lotuses of creativity if we choose to be. You know, we're all aligned and part of the creator, which is infinite. So as long as we want to keep exploring our souls, there's always going to be something else to discover.
Absolutely.
So I love that. So something else I thought was really interesting as I was reading your book, you don't seem to think it's important or necessary to understand each other in the context of a romantic relationship.
It is not. Sorry, say it again. I'm not sure I heard you right.
You don't think it is important or necessary to understand each other.
I wonder where I said that. Did I say that? Wow.
Yeah, you did. It was in one of the later chapters where it's like, you're not going to understand them, you know, so don't try.
Yes. Sorry. No, the way you said it. You're right. Yeah.
I've memorized your book.
Nicely done. No, because. Let me say that more clearly. Yes, it's true that if we keep trying to understand our partners, we'll never win because we're very different. It's more about getting our partners. It's in the old Robert Heinlein term, it's to grok them. It's to understand who they are, not what they're saying. Because when we're trying to figure each other out, it's like trying to take an engine apart. It doesn't really benefit anybody. Enjoy the process and to keep learning who we are. Because a lot of times we're trying to figure out partners because we're not working on figuring out who we are. And it's more important always to a better understanding who we are because we're driving ourselves.
Yes.
And let our partner figure out themselves.
I think that's so true. You know, often when I work with clients, like, well, I know him so well. I said, well, how about be open to not knowing him? Something I loved witnessing, Barry and I had the same mentors for a while. And something I loved watching Ron and Mary Holnick was it's like they never assumed they completely knew the other person. And that's the first time I've ever seen that exemplified. It's like they would look at each other with this perplexed look on their face or just laugh uproariously. Didn't you love that? That was so much
fun. Absolutely. And that's the truth. I mean, that's the other part of it. It's also about the recognition that we're always changing and growing. So it's always something new. And that's the thing I talk about again in the book is about, that's what it was. Okay, I didn't hear right. The truth is that we never expect to understand our partners because we're always growing. So there's never going to be, they're fixed in a box, complete, solid, that's the way they are. Mm-hmm. No, that's never going to happen. We're always continually growing and evolving. That's the joy of spending time together. We continue to explore and discover new things about ourselves and each other. That's the freshness of a relationship, which is wonderful.
Yeah, I think that's so important. I think a lot of times people put a lid on it because they think they know the other person. And when the boredom and the constriction can start to seep into the relationship. And that's what kills the romance, I think.
Yes, it does.
So, yeah, to keep that open mind, to continue to learn and grow about, in regards to your relationship with yourself. And then keep that space open so that you're always doing that for your partner,
Yes, absolutely. I agree totally.
Yeah, that's, I love asking open-ended questions. What do you think about this? What do you feel about that? And learning to really listen, just be really present and listen and not assume you know. That's been a tougher quality for me to cultivate in my relationship.
We always have that growing edge, and that's part of the process. And also remember, it's both ways, not just, okay, one person, not the other person all the time. Yeah, what do you think about this? What do you believe about this? Like, well, then what's the other side of the coin? Going to both be involved in this conversation.
Right, yeah, because it could be really out of balance. It could really create a dynamic of imbalance if that's the case, for sure.
Yes, absolutely.
So, Barry, you work with both single people wanting to be in a relationship and couples, right?
Yes, I do. Yes.
Yeah, go ahead.
After you.
No, I was just wondering, do you do that? Can you do that by phone? Can you do it online? Do you do it in person? How do people get a hold of you if they're thinking, I'd like a session with this expert Selby guy? how do they do this? How does this work?
They can reach me through my website. I actually have a contact form on my website. So they can just simply go to my website. Again, thepassionconsultant.com. There's a contact form on there. And they can fill it out and send an email to me that way. And I can respond back to them. I do see clients in person if they're local, so I'm in Los Angeles. On the phone and occasionally on Skype. When I work with clients, one thing I'd be clear about is that I do tend to over-deliver. So even though they're going to have, for example, working for a month and four distinct sessions, there will be emails, there'll be assignments, there'll be practices in between that time. So it won't just be 4 hours over the month. It'll be a lot more than that.
Right.
So it will be constant. There'll be communication that will transform. That's what I'm passionate about, doing that. So different ways they can work with me. And yes, I do work one-on-one with clients and with couples. I love the Romance Blueprint program because more people can do that and get value themselves and come see me. In fact, right now, I think I mentioned on my website, I've reduced the price, but also I'm adding a gift of a free one-hour coaching session on top of the program for free. So that's just a special bonus I've offered as well. But one-on-one coaching I love doing as well because it makes results faster.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that it's such powerful work that you're doing. So you are a USM graduate. You've got your master's in spiritual psychology, and you're also an agape practitioner. Can you tell me about that?
Yeah. For those of you who've ever watched The Secret, they may have seen Reverend Michael Beckwith in there. He's the only African-American person in the movie, male, that is.
I guess that's true. I didn't realize that.
Yeah, he and Lisa Nichols, I think, were the only African-Americans in the movie. But anyway, so Agape Spiritual Center in Culver City is my home. It's been going for 25 years. I've been going for 17. And in year 2000, I was licensed as a practitioner, having been through 4 years in spiritual study with the teaching. And basically what that means is I'm licensed by the church as a spiritual counselor. It's part of my toolkit. I do other things as well. But when I'm Agape, my focus is to be a practitioner. So holding the space of prayer work, meditation, serving, teaching, and being of service in a big way of that. So that's kind of what I do as a practitioner.
Mm, I love that. I love your heart. I love your intention. I love your generosity of spirit. And it's just been a pleasure to reconnect with you. It's like, you know, we were talking earlier. I think you've been in my life for like 12, 14 years, some big number like that. It's crazy.
Yeah.
It's crazy, isn't it? So I'm just so happy to reconnect with you here and just so proud of all the work you're doing and the light you're bringing into the world and how your intention is to truly inspire and support and empower people. It's what I'm about. That's what this network is about. And I think you're doing some fantastic work. So
Thank you.
Just so grateful. So grateful to you, Barry.
My pleasure. So, thank you so much for having me on the show.
Yeah, absolutely. So if anybody listening would like to be considered as a guest or they want to, you know, write to me with questions, concerns, thoughts, ideas, you can get a hold of me at tammybphd.com, tammybphd.com, or you can write to me at tammybphd@gmail.com, and that's Tammy with an I. I'm always so excited to connect with my listeners and people that would like to be featured on the show. If you're an expert, you know, that's what this is about. It's just connecting with people of like mind, connecting with people with the intention to bring greater confidence and consciousness into the world. Because, Barry, don't you think a lot of what's out there is really fear-based and negative?
It has that aspect, and I'm looking how we can change that. So, yes, I'm on the other side of the coin saying, let's make it bigger and better.
That's exactly right, because I think, you know, what we focus on increases. So I think that was Brent's intention. Brent Carey, the president of Empower's intention, was like, what's right with the world? What's right with this picture? Let's focus on that. So we will go that direction. Yeah, because our thoughts are like a steering wheel. We go the direction of our thoughts. Mm-hmm. So if we focus on what's good and right and positive, it's a miracle. Things get better.
Absolutely.
And I think that's true in our relationships as well. So I love your book. It's just so fun to just go in there and read two or three or four pages or a chapter. There's like 50. So it's easy to go in there and get a little nugget and then bring it into your life, bring it into your relationship to continue to just up level and go deeper and go higher, which I think it's awesome. It's awesome that this material is available, and it's awesome that you're doing this work, Barry.
Thank you so much. Yeah, I love the book. It was something that came through so easily because I knew it's what I love and teach. So I'm grateful people can read it now because it makes it easy to understand. I love it.
I know. It's so funny because I was like, gosh, Barry, isn't writing a book tough and intense? You're like, not so much. I'm like, I'm going to set that intention for my next book. Oh my gosh, you're so cute. All right, Barry, thank you for being here with us. Thank you, Kat, for producing another fun and wonderful show. Thank you, Brent Carey, for creating this form called Empower Radio. You are a radio rock star. Thank you, listeners, for hanging out with us. Write to me at tammybphd@gmail.com. Would love to hear from you. Take care. God bless. Onward and upward. Bye for now.